Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
Hey, everyone. It is the conclusion to Pro-Life Week here on the Council of Trent podcast. Welcome. I'm your host, Catholic Answers apologist and speaker, Trent Horn. And we've been talking about Pro-Life Week here on the show for the past 2 days. We've done some heavy-hitting philosophy. You got to, if you haven't listened to it yet, be sure to go and check it out. My two-part interview with John DeRosa from the Classical Theist podcast, where I talk about the best pro-life philosophical arguments, as well as how to refute the toughest pro-choice philosophical arguments that are out there. But today, I want to give our brains a little rest and have some fun, though it will tie in to what I've discussed on Tuesday and Thursday. For example, our guest today helped to introduce me to these philosophical arguments. He has a passion for wisdom, a passion for putting himself out there, even on tough college campuses. He is a mentor and role model for me. His name is Steve Wagner. He is he was the director of training at Justice for All, where I used to do my pro-life work. I believe he is now the executive director of the organization. Here's what I want to do today. Today is about having fun. Free for All Fridays are fun, but I wanted to just share with you, I wanted to go on a stroll down memory lane. I do that often. I have a melancholic temperament, and we have a bad trait, a habit, if you will, of, you know, going into the past, strolling down memory lane. These were formative years in my life, though. I would not be the Catholic apologist you listen to today on the Council of Trent or Catholic Answers Live. I would not be where I am today without the formation I received at Justice for All. We'll talk a little bit more about what Justice for All is in a moment, but just to be short, it's a pro-life missionary organization that goes to college campuses. We set up the big, ugly abortion exhibits and talk to students about them, and that's where I got my chops. That's where I got my first interactive exercises, if you will, of engaging people who disagree, sometimes in very adversarial context, and even to do so with many people looking on. So it was a lot of learning experiences, and it was just a lot of fun. It was a fun time in my early 20s, and so I want to take you back to the trenches of doing pro-life activism work. And to help us do that is my mentor, friend, former colleague, Steve Wagner, who at that time was a director of training for Justice for All. He's now the executive director. He's going to help guide us down the path. Steve, welcome to the Council of Trent podcast.
Trent, it's great to be with you. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. So why don't you tell our listeners a little bit more about yourself?
I'm the executive director of Justice for All, and I'm the author of a book called Common Ground Without Compromise that I wrote back in 2008. And that book was focused on finding questions that we could ask pro-choice advocates or friends, anybody, in order to start the conversation about abortion with things that we agree about, so that we could have more productive conversations about things we disagree about. So that's just one of the things that I've done.
And to give you your research for that, your ideas for that book, a lot of that come from the theme of our episode today is being in the trenches of going to college campuses with Justice for All. Just what I did. I worked with Justice for All from, I want to say, 2008 or 9 until like 2011, though I started traveling to university campuses where we would set up our big three-sided exhibit with pictures of the unborn before and after abortion. The thing was huge. It was 18 feet high, 40 feet wide on each side. The very first exhibit I went to, I think, was in 2006. This was before I graduated college. You guys had come to Arizona State University, and I thought this was a really cool thing to be out there and be able to debate and dialogue with students. You know what was funny, Steve? So the first time I met you guys was at Arizona State. You were out there, you're doing the open mic. I think the pro-choice students had a die-in. They were all lying on the ground. You know, like, if you do this, you'll kill people from illegal abortions.
And they were all acting dead. And we went and interviewed them on the open mic. That was our response.
Yeah, you tried interviewing them. To see, like, we would do these open microphone sessions where we turned on a mic with a speaker and asked students, what did you think about this? You did that, and then I eventually got in the reins of doing that. It was a ton of fun. I think one of the students said, I can't talk, I'm dead.
Right.
At least you're staying true to character. But when I went to my philosophy class after that, The professor said, Mr. Horn, why were you late to class? I said, oh, I was dialoguing about abortion at the MU. They have that big abortion exhibit. He said, oh, you were talking to one of those anti-abortion nuts. And I said, I am one of the anti-abortion nuts, sir. So, but I think he actually respected. I was willing to challenge him on that. And who says there's no liberal bias on university campuses? Right. Well, let's I want to go back a little, give people more background on you, because you yourself are not Catholic. You used to work for a non-Catholic Christian apologetics organization. Then you got involved with Justice for All. How did that happen?
Yeah. So I started doing my work working alongside Scott Klusendorf and Greg Kokel at Stand to Reason. And we focused on making a public defense for the Christian faith based on good reasons that could be really accessible to anybody, not just people of faith. And my particular area was focusing on bioethics and mainly abortion. I got into the work because I wanted to do something to help stop the killing of thousands of unborn children every day. And I wanted to do something long term that would actually solve the problem for good, meaning we would have to change enough minds to change public opinion so that we could change public policy. Right. And there, the work of changing, of turning a woman who's going to get an abortion, helping her to not get an abortion, is a valuable work. It's very important. And I admire the people who do that work on a daily basis. But our work's a little different. We're trying to cause a massive shift in public opinion, really the world over, so that none of us are willing to tolerate the killing of unborn children anymore. So that's the work I've been about since about 2001. In 2002, I visited a Justice for All exhibit because Scott encouraged me to do it. Well, actually, I think I met David Lee, the executive director at that time of Justice for All. He invited me to come to the exhibit at UCLA in 2002. And the first conversation I had at UCLA, from that moment on, I was hooked, because this was a place where I was putting into practical shoe leather the things I was trying to teach people. I'm teaching people to have conversations about abortion. Well, I guess I better go out and do it myself.
Yeah, it's easy. It's easy to read. Yeah, it's easy to read apologetics. It's easy to read about how to defend your faith, how to defend the unborn. It's something different. That's what I loved about Justice for All. You actually go out there and you got to talk to other real people who are not just the stereotypical opponent in a pamphlet or a book or an article, a three-dimensional person that you've got to engage at the intellectual, emotional, and spiritual level in a dialogue to lead into truth. And we did a good job with that at JFA. It was great.
Well, and that puts all of your ideas, the sort of ivory tower ideas or the study that you've done. I'm talking about you, all of us here, not just you, but you have done a lot of study. It takes that study and it puts it in the crucible, right? And what you come out with at the end is something a little different than what you started with. A good example of that for me is over the last 18 years that I've been doing this work, or 19 years, I've had a shift in how I deal with bodily rights arguments to feeling like we've got to start our response to bodily rights arguments relationally. We have to realize that when somebody says, when we say we think abortion should not be legal, women should essentially be forced to stay pregnant by law, that feels violating to the person to the woman who thinks she might get pregnant. Mm-hmm. And if we don't recognize the feeling that she's experiencing and that the men around her are experiencing being concerned for her, our intellectual response is going to fall flat. So both are necessary, relational and intellectual.
Well, it's kind of like what we had done, like what I loved at the Justice for All training. I think the most powerful part of the training was we had a module. So before we would, just an inside for everyone who's listening, before we would take people out to university campuses, we had people on the team who had done this for a long time, but we wanted to train people on a Sunday or a Saturday for about 8 hours. And then we would take them out to a university campus to put it into practice. And that made all the difference to talk to real people. I think the most powerful part of the training was when we showed a video of people, of a real conversation on campus of a pro-life gentleman answering the question, what about abortion in the case of rape, from a young woman who had been a victim of sexual assault. And it's basically like watching an airplane crash. And then we sit there and say, okay, so why did the plane crash? What could have been done differently? And I think what the verdict we came to was, you have to reach someone logically, but first relationally, and validate those kinds of emotional concerns they have.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's a really special part of our training. I'm pleased to have seen some other pro-life groups like the Equal Rights Institute, highlighting that same concept in their training. And if we make any sort of change in the pro-life efforts, I would love to see that change become widespread, habitual for all pro-life advocates. Right. Starting the conversation, it's almost like it's okay to just have common sense and just say, well, if somebody says that they were raped, what's your first response? Well, you probably would say,
it's not the child's fault.
That happened.
Yeah, right. I loved in the training, we would tell people, actually, I think this was what I coined at one point in the training that we did. I coined the term DBW. So here's a rule when you're out on campus. Don't be weird. DBW. Don't be weird. Don't try to win every conversation. When someone says, what about abortion in the case of rape? Or I was raped. Do you think, what do you think about that? Well, I think that's irrelevant to the issue. Well,
what about the baby?
Human. Yeah. Right. Be a normal human. It doesn't mean you say you're right. Abortion should be legal and it's okay. And that's what I loved. And when we would go out there, that we could put this into practice in a sensible way. And it's what I've been trying to do in my own ministry as an apologist. So let's talk a little bit more about what it was like when we would go out and do this just on a day on campus. So the way I would look at it is, we could look at it just at a regular day. First, we'd wake up in the morning. I always, and as teams, we would go to these schools, right? And we had host families that would host us, and we were split up, and the gracious people that supported us, we would stay with the host family and then show up on campus.
Yeah, don't forget that 18-hour truck ride from Wichita to Atlanta or whatever it was.
Some people got to fly or drive personal vehicles, but if you were in the truck, so we had an 18, this exhibit, people, 18 feet high, 40 feet long. We would drive it. We had a large pickup truck that would carry this huge trailer. It's like a trailer you would carry a race car in. And so some of us, like yours truly, got to ride in the truck in a lot of places. And so we're going in the truck, and that thing got maybe 10 miles to the gallon. One time, Steve, we ran out of gas in Colorado because we were driving against the wind.
Yeah.
And we got such bad gas mileage. So we would go. But if you were staying at the host family with the truck, you would have to get up at 5 in the morning and show up before light, because we had to get the exhibit set up before the students got there. One time, though, I remember we did show up at like 5:30 to get the exhibit going, and there was one guy sitting there protesting, trying to get us to keep us from setting it up.
Yeah, well, we've actually had a group of 20 students at Colorado State sit right in the spot where we were supposed to set up the exhibit. Yeah,
that's right.
David Lee sat down right with the students and turned it into a conversation opportunity.
It was really great. I remember that. I remember being at that, and we did have a good conversation with that group of protesters. Though I felt sad for the one at the other school, it was just one guy. So we just started setting up around him, like put the cooler next to him, like, hey, you can grab a drink if you want that. So, I just remember Laura would make fun of me because, I don't know, I guess I'm just a little bit lazy at heart. I'd start setting it up, the cold steel pipes, and it was like barn raising. You all got together to put it up, and a lot of wrenches and screws to put together. I always tried to say, oh, someone's looking at the exhibit, I better go talk to them.
Right. Let me find my place in this construction situation.
Someone's got to minister to these people. But the other thing that I remembered a lot, so we would go, we would set that up, and students would look at it. So some schools were pretty tame. Students would walk by and just look at it, and then we would talk to them. I remember there was two strategies we had when we would talk to people. There was being on the fence. So we had this big exhibit, right? But we also had a steel barricade in front of it to give people distance and keep people from making stupid decisions. So it's, you know, it's a little 3 foot high steel barricade. And so you could sit on a chair behind the barricade and let the people come to you. And they know, hey, you're with this crazy thing. I want to talk to you. And I did that sometimes. It was kind of like being in the complaints department. Here I am. Come right up with your complaint. And you got a lot more colorful characters when you did that. The other one I would do, though, is I would just float around the exhibit and then just start talking to people. And it would take them. I remember once I talked with someone for like an hour until I finally revealed I worked at the exhibit.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know what your strategy was a lot of
times. Yeah, well, outside the nice, you know, one of the things we have always done is we haven't worn uniforms or name tags to identify ourselves. And that's partly just to not put an impediment in the conversation. We certainly weren't trying to, deceive people. But it's more like if somebody comes, if you're able to say, what do you think about this exhibit? You know, and you're outside the barricade, the person is more likely to be on an even keel, sort of comfortable, if you don't identify yourself as, you know, I am a representative of this big graphic, outreach event. And our volunteers would, you know, if they were asked, are you a volunteer? They would say, we instructed them to be honest. We don't totally lie to people. But that made the conversation more, we had, many times in Colorado, we had 90 students out with us to do these exhibits, and they would just surround the exhibit, most of them outside the barricade, and just ask people what they thought. And it actually created its own crowd, right? Because when you brought 90 students to the campus, it looks like a crowd, even though they're all your volunteers. So that created more. It sort of like feeds on itself, right? It's more comfortable for people to come up and stand in a crowd, right?
Right. And that's why we also use the open microphone to attract people, because that is a crowd generator. And I really enjoyed being on that because, like I said, it gave me the biggest preparation for my current role as an apologist. You you did this as well, that open microphone. It's what's funny to me, Steve. I heard some people at the campuses claim that we use scripted actors. Did you ever come across that? There were people like they're just using actors. Like, no, these are real people. You can't make this up. But it taught you to think on your feet, to act well under pressure, grace under pressure, and to the open microphone, which is interesting because that was the precursor to what I do now on Catholic Answers Live. Catholic Answers Live is when I do the Why Are You Pro-Choice show. It's kind of similar to open mic in that I'm talking to somebody, but I'm doing it for the benefit of the many other people who are listening. So that could happen on open mic or just if you're in the exhibit and someone's getting kind of loud with you, kind of a crowd can start to form around you. It's like a little street fight, even though we're not fighting. It kind of turns into that dynamic.
Well, and you probably experienced this on Catholic Answers Live, but if the kind of caller or person that walks up to the mic really determines how many people want to listen or whether it's interesting. I mean, I've been on open mic sometimes where I can't get somebody to engage, or I get somebody who's very soft spoken or who's very calm and wants to lay out their thoughts very logically. And I like that kind of person in dialogue. I'm happy to have them on the mic, but they tend to not draw a crowd.
It's just not great for ratings.
Yeah, exactly. And for that reason, you know, I have some mixed feelings about the open mic in that sense that, it's a certain kind of dialogue. It's a certain kind of medium that creates its own, message, right?
Right.
And when I'm one-on-one with somebody and they don't have to save face in front of a crowd, it's very different than if they're on the mic. And so one thing I loved about our open mic, and I'm eager to get out there and do it again. One thing I loved about our open mic is you and I and our other moderators on our open mic worked really hard to let people talk We decide at one point we're going to hold the mic because if we give the other person the mic, then they might talk for 15 minutes and we don't have any chance to help this conversation be productive. So
right.
We decided to hold the mic, but we worked really hard to let people talk, let people cut in, let people interrupt us. You know, we tried to make it productive, but we really worked hard to give people a voice, not censor them. Like that, it was the opposite. It was truly a free speech activity. Our free speech board was the same way. We give right. people a pen, give people a big piece of white paper, and they wrote some of the most vile comments that I never right. want to read again. But that's an important part of free speech.
Right, because it was through that we got the good people on the microphone, the good people writing on the free speech board. And it's so funny because we wanted to have dialogue and discourse, but there were many campuses where the students and frankly the faculty wanted to shut us down. I have a few written down here that come to my mind. Number one, when it comes to craziness, I don't know if you have certain campuses that stick out to your mind as just being kind of crazy. University of New Mexico was always a hoot.
That's right.
We had
20 protest tables, something like 20 set up one year. And the abortion doctor set up a table to, promote his services. The Midwives for Reproductive Justice had their alternative exhibit to our exhibit. They were showing graphic pictures of a different sort. I think they were showing childbirth photos or something. But they were also, it's like they were birthing babies on the one hand, but arguing for abortion on the other hand.
There are 20 tables of protesters. There were hundreds of protesters. I think at one point they created like a giant paper mache woman or monster or something to encircle the exhibit. There was the guy in the red robe with the skeleton mask, who had Skeletor, we referenced earlier, who was talking to people. There was a guy, that was the exhibit where a guy came up dressed in a full tunic and beard and said he was Jesus and said to stop doing this in his name.
Well, and our approach was generally, I mean, we were honest that we are Christians. Typically, if somebody would ask us if we're Christian, we would ask the question, what do you mean by Christian? Because I literally have no idea what you mean by that. And I wasn't trying to be belligerent. We were genuinely trying to get more clarity in the conversation. I'm happy to admit, to promote the idea, to be forthright, courageous about the fact that I'm a Christian, even if it's going to be unpopular. But I don't want to be misunderstood about what I mean by Christian. And what they have in their mind is as a idea of what a Christian is probably not what I think I am.
That's what I liked about Justice for All, to go on a short digression. We were really an we had a wide spectrum of Christian beliefs and denominations. And that was good for us to work together. And so that led to, I think, what was really fun then when we would get off campus and then it's like we were out there for 8 hours in the pressure cooker talking to students about a morbid thing in front of a morbid exhibit. And then we take everything down and our adrenaline is high, especially if someone's yelling at you or there's protesters. And then when we took the exhibit down and we got in the truck and we drove away, there was always that sigh of relief, like, okay, now we can go to Soup Plantation, or now we can go have the lasagna, salad, and breadsticks at the host home and talk to one another about other things. And I always felt there were three things that, you know, we were young college students going out and doing this, a mixture ecumenical group. There were three things we always ended up talking about: Catholicism versus Protestantism, evolution versus creation, and how do you find a spouse and dating? Those are the three things.
Right. In fact, you created the beginnings of a seminar that I don't know if it ever came to fruition, Trent.
Because we did abortion from debate to dialogue, and I joked. I said, I'm going to use our own techniques to create dating from frustration to elation, like the DFE. seminar. What's really funny about Justice for All, though, if you want to meet a spouse, go work there. A lot of people that worked there ended up, I mean, that's where you met your wife.
That's right. I met my wife. Matt and Maureen met through working with Justice for All. You and Laura met or or became more acquainted through Justice for All. Yeah.
And especially because it ends up being like, you go to Justice for All, it's like, hey, I remember once, Steve, I went out on a date with a young woman who was not Laura. And she asked, like, so what do you like to do? I said, oh, I like to do pro-life work. She said, oh, I think pro-life work's great. Except those people who put up those big abortion things.
Right.
Those people are such weirdos. I looked down at my watch. Oh, gosh. An hour and 58 minutes left of this date.
I had almost the same experience on a date where I went out with this gal and we started talking about what we did or something. And this was through eHarmony. So we hadn't, you know, my strategy on eHarmony was to try to actually meet the person in person as quickly as possible and not spend a lot of time on, you know, text format conversations. Right. And she had gone to UCLA. And I was mentioning that I did pro-life work and I was recently at UCLA with these big signs at this exhibit, the Justice for All exhibit. And this is way back in 2003 or four, something like that.
Yeah.
And she said, oh, you're one of those people. Same
it's
thing.
Like, well,
okay. What are we going to talk about now for the rest of?
So,
sat down.
So I guess I'm not going to be in your top eight on MySpace then. So
exactly.
I'm going to go home and write about this in my live journal and that will be that. Yeah. So then you go out and it's like, oh, wow, you and I both really enjoy doing this narrow niche thing that most other people either detest or they might support, but still think, wow, I could never see myself doing that on a regular basis. But we formed great relationships, and a lot of people who work with Justice for All have now gone on to do things with other pro-life apostolates or with other ministries. And I think what I really appreciated about that is that when we went out and talked to students on campus, I mean, we're eccentric. You have to be eccentric to do this kind of work. But we weren't weirdos. We related and empathized with people, and we brought that to the conversations we had.
And brought other things into the, I mean, we teach our volunteers, look, sometimes you just need to shift the conversation to talking about something other than abortion. Talk about what the person's major is. What are they interested in? Because you got to try to find some way to build common ground with them. Mm-hmm. And I've always felt, Trent, like that's one of the things that you were good at in that context, because you have other interests, right?
You have
movie interests and you know, some pro-life advocates, all they care about is abortion. All they talk about is abortion. They can only, you know, they think about the fetus all the time, the unborn child. I understand that and I value those people. But my encouragement would be you got to branch out a little bit, because people are going to, they need to want to be like you. And it's hard to want to be like someone who's very one-dimensional.
Right. So, for example, if we're at Pasadena City College, I could comment on the video games that people were playing there in the quad, the open square. That was the fun. Like, every school had a different flavor to it. So we go to some schools, it's full of like liberal social justice warriors. I loved Pasadena City College because, and actually, I think Ed Fazer teaches there. He's a really good Catholic philosopher.
Yeah.
But Pasadena City College, the students had a lot more relaxed feeling. We had our abortion exhibit set up, and they just hung out in the quad. Like, the students majored in hanging out in the union all day.
Skateboarding, yeah.
Yeah, they had video games just set up right out there. So I remember that. But the other one, though, in California, when it came to maybe the more social justice warrior types, was the University of California at Santa Barbara. So...
Yeah,
I remember when we went to Santa Barbara. It's a beautiful school right on the ocean. Every student has a bike there. They have bike highways that go through the campus. And we set up our big exhibit. And I saw four students walk out of the gender and women's studies building. And they saw our exhibit and flipped open their phones and got on the phones. And they had a chain of protesters around us in about 20 minutes. But what was funny about that one, Steve, was the Genocide Awareness Project was also with us that day, another pro-life organization that does similar exhibits. And they went all out. They didn't just have like exhibits. They had a truck driving around with a graphic image. They had planes towing banners. When the students saw the plane with the banner, they just couldn't handle it anymore.
Yeah, exactly. They thought that it was sort of a coordinated
campaign.
Yeah, campaign. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Yeah, on the open mic that day, or one of those days at Santa Barbara, I actually had a conversation about dating with a gal, because she was very antagonistic, and she said something like, you know, you can't get a date, can you? You know, and I at that point was working on the dating thing, and I said, yeah, I mean, it's true. I am the sort of man who wants to honor a woman, and I would never sleep with her unless I was willing to be married to her and committed to her in case she got pregnant. And I guess people just aren't interested in that kind of commitment and respect.
Right. I can't believe you'd say something like that.
Right.
Do you want to go to the Panera later so I can talk to you? What was funny, actually, the one that I thought was always hilarious at the exhibit, Steve, were we would have Laura would be a great example of this. We would have young, vibrant, great personality, attractive, you know, female staffers and employees. Like, let's take Laura be an example. She'll be out there talking to somebody, sharing the pro-life worldview, making great arguments. And this guy will just utter the most offensive pro-choice slogans about no fetus shall defeat us. And, you know, there'll be these guys just like talking to Laura or someone else, you know, debating. You're wrong about this. You're wrong about that. And at the end of the conversation, so do you want to go to the Jamba Juice?
You know, so true. It's happened many times in with different women at our events. It's almost like they look at the guy and say, have you been listening? Have you heard what I've been saying? We do not have the same worldview.
Well, imagine it's like we don't have anything in common. Well, sure we do. I like talking. You like listening to me talking. What more do we need? I remember.
You're willing to sit here and spend time with me.
Isn't that enough? I remember it, UCSB, University of California, Santa Barbara. But yeah, I remember some students, but yeah, they would just become apoplectic. At UCSB, we had a student, he jumped over the barricade and tried to set the exhibit on fire. He wasn't going to be able to. He had a little lighter. He's trying to get it to go, and it's not going to happen. And I asked like a security guard, are you going to stop this person? And he said, well, there, you know, it's free speech for everyone. And I'm like, he's trying to set it on fire.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was just plain to me. We would go to campuses. Some campuses had faculty and administration that were pro free speech and helped us out. But others, it was just patently clear they wanted to undermine us any chance they got. Like, remember at the University of Oklahoma, you had the students, you had drums and conch shells.
Yeah, they were actually going around, because blowing kazoos in people's faces who were having conversations. That was actually, it was a really hard environment to be in because it was so noisy.
Yes, I remember on the open microphone, I said, what do you think? And someone blew a kazoo. And I'm such a nerd. I was reading some book on, you know, Shannon information theory. And I said, that has low a kazoo has low information content.
Yeah, exactly.
How am I supposed to work with that? And we asked, this is what got me, Steve. We'd asked the university, can we do an open microphone session? And they said, no, you're not allowed to do amplified noise. But the protesters could amplify as much noise as they wanted. And that would always be frustrating when it's like, look, you may not have to agree with us, but you guys should at least be fair in implementing the rules. That was always discouraging.
Yeah, well, the University of Oklahoma has been a hard nut to crack in terms of engaging students, getting students to engage in a productive way. We've certainly gotten the crowds of protesters there. But I remember, I mean, that's been a little bit of a testing ground for us. I mean, since you've been with us at JFA, we've created an art exhibit that's 16 feet tall. We've created a totally different exhibit called Stop and Think that's 16 feet tall. We've put up both of those at the University of Oklahoma as experiments to see if they will draw more conversation. The art exhibit has the Mona Lisa and other great works of art. So we were trying to see if we could draw people just with something beautiful as opposed to something ugly. And each of the works of art is related to the topic of unintended pregnancy somehow. And people can see that at our website, jfaweb.org/exhibits.
Right.
But we actually, at University of Oklahoma, we even turned our exhibit inside out one day. And it's just white. It's just white vinyl on the backside, and then it's a printed image on the front side. We turned it inside out. We went to all that trouble to see, well, will this get a conversation started? It actually didn't, you know. So in right. some contexts, you know, we get criticized. You're showing us these images. You know, this is not productive for dialogue. And we would typically point out, well, we are having a conversation right now. Would you be talking to me if I hadn't put this up? And they said, no, I wouldn't be talking to you.
Right. People would always say, why don't you just set up a table and people can come over to you? And I'd say, right. Well, because I would talk to two people. And when people got mad, it's funny. I mean, sometimes it would depend on my mood in the day and whether I had had my Chick-fil-A yet. Sure. So sometimes I would be very empathetic and emotional. And then other times, a tad sarcastic, may not have been as productive. People, you know, how could you put up these disgusting pictures? And my sarcastic reply is, why are you so mad at me? I'm not the one who killed these babies. Do you think I did this? You
know? Right, exactly. And they weren't expecting to have to talk about the baby, right? Because there's
right. But that's it. But that's important. And that's why I think as we wind down our conversation here, what I liked when I went out with you and with Justice for All, it really helped people to see that in conversations about abortion, if you're not talking about the unborn, you're doing something wrong. Like, that's the only way for the conversation to be productive. You have to get people to talk about what are the unborn, and based on what they are, how do we treat them humanely? And you got to get people to around that question rather than more abstract questions related to the issue.
Yeah, I agree. And the only amendment that I would make to that now is I think if we're not talking about the unborn, but also concerned about the person that we're talking to,
right,
and concerned about the woman who's experiencing this topic personally, we're not going to make an impact. So that's actually the reason for our new workshop at Justice for All. It's called Love 3. That's why we titled it Love 3, because any good conversation about abortion has to love the person we're talking to, has to love the unborn child and the woman who's experienced, or the woman or man who's experiencing this personally. But we have to love each of those human beings equally at every moment of the conversation. That's the balancing act that I think you that you work out on a day, you know, on whenever you're doing Catholic Answers Live with those pro-choice advocates, you're working that out in real time, right? You're trying to figure out, what can I say right now that won't forget the unborn child, that won't forget the woman, but that will and won't treat the person I'm talking to in a way that is not respectful of their value as an image bearer of God.
Amen to that. A perfect note to end on. Steve, where can people go to learn more about Justice for All? I know with the pandemic, it totally threw a monkey wrench into what you normally do, but you guys are adapting. Yeah. And soon I know you'll be back out there. Things will get back to some kind of a normal. Well, not the new normal. I want the old normal. But where can people learn more about you guys and what you do?
So we're doing our website is jfaweb.org, and our Instagram is Picture Justice for All. And those are two good places that people can find us. So jfaweb.org and then at Picture Justice for All. Our new Love 3 workshop is just jfaweb.org/love and the number 3, Love 3. And people can go and check that workshop out. It's an online interactive training experience. It's 7 total hours, but there are lots of convenient options. And we actually are starting those. I think when people will be hearing this show, we're going to be starting them during that week. So if you go and look and you have missed the first week, you should still sign up and just request the first session or second session, whatever you missed. And we'd love to have you join us.
You guys should definitely go and check it out. As I said before, I would not be the apologist I am today without the good work of Justice for All. So if you can get out there, I find that pro-life apologetics is a great stepping stone to being a defender of the Christian faith in general. Many times on campus, I would start talking with someone about abortion, and then we started talking about the existence of God or the resurrection of Jesus Christ. But the same tools we use of loving the person we're talking to apply across the board. And JFA gave me a great model to learn how to do that. Be sure to go check out their website. Steve, I can't wait to have you back on. I think we need to do a roundtable with some other pro-lifers just to put all of our thoughts down. We'll get Stephanie Gray in here, Josh Brom. We'll make it happen. Good. What do you say about that?
That sounds great. I love it. It's a privilege to be your friend, Trent, to be on the show. Thanks.
It is a privilege to have you on the show, but it's a far greater privilege to have you as a friend and brother in Christ. Thank you so much, Steve, for coming on. Thank you all for listening, and I hope that you all have a very blessed day.
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit TrentHornPodcast.com.